okay, I really don't want to join this other software engineering team because I didn't, you know, like, I value my mental health and I hadn't heard good things about that team. So I was like, you know what, let me just go and do this DevOps, right?
That's interesting because I would have assumed that for DevOps.
She said she values her mental health and then went ahead to do DevOps. That's crazy.
You know, like I was very newly introduced to DevOps at the time.
On this episode, we're joined by Ibukun Itimi, who is an observability engineering manager working at one of the biggest fintechs in the world. We talk about her unusual journey into tech and how she navigates her relationship with colleagues as a manager. In addition to her work as an engineer and manager, Ibukun runs a vibrant tech community called Come Tech With Us, which aims to provide resources for career growth and explore different aspects of tech beyond engineering. Our guest shares her passion for helping others navigate their careers and offers valuable insights and advice throughout the episode. All right, enjoy the episode.
Hello everyone, I'm Chuka.
And I'm Emmanuel.
And you're listening to Inside the Techosystem podcast, where we explore Nigeria's tech landscape one conversation at a time. Hello there, ITT fam. You're welcome to another episode of Inside the Techosystem. And it's a bright day today. We're recording in the afternoon, which we rarely do, but we had to move things around. You know, we have a special episode today. We had an appointment with the president, and we had to like just shift it so we can accommodate the pressure that we have today. And you know, I'm so glad we're here today. Man, it was good, man. How's it going?
Good. Same old. Nothing much. Nothing new. Please don't talk about my life. Thanks.
I feel like people enjoy hearing about your life, you know. The other day we had a comment saying, oh, you know, I thought the person in the UK, someone thought you lived in the UK. It doesn't. That's fun. Today we have a superstar, like we call all our guests, superstars. And, we're very excited to have her on the show today. Hello, Ibukun. Before I let Ibukun introduce herself, I'd just like to say Ibukun is an observability engineer. Now, before we got started and prepared for this episode, Emmanuel and I tried to rehearse the word observability because it's a lot of syllables. So I'd like to know how, you know, do you always say observability? Because that's a lot, you know? Yeah. Do you always say observability? You always say that?
No, I actually don't, because I'm an engineering manager. I'm a software engineer. I don't try
All
to
right. explain. All right, cool. All right, so Ibukun is an engineering manager, a software engineer, an observability engineer. And she's doing great stuff. She has worked with, you know, very interesting companies like Paystack and Wise. And, you know, she has a tech community. She runs a tech community where they talk about tech and, you know, teach career stuff as well. And she's also a LinkedIn instructor. Or should I just say instructor in general? Because I feel like, you know, it's not just LinkedIn.
Maybe like it's, I mean, right now I only have courses on LinkedIn, but it's coming.
Okay. But it's coming. Nice. It's coming. All right. That's cool.
You heard it first on the show.
Yeah, exactly. We get exclusive content here all the time. People don't give us enough props for that. But yeah, Ibukun, we're so excited to have you here. We'll just let you, you know, introduce yourself further, you know, take it away.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys. My name is Ibukun Itimi. I'm an engineering manager. I lead an observability team, which I have done for a few years now. So I used to work at Paystack and then I joined Wise, still leading the observability team. And I run a career and tech community. I guess my community and my courses kind of stem out of my interest in sharing my knowledge. I like when people know like things that I know, because I mean, it just makes things easier for people. So that's kind of why I do those things. And yeah, I recently started like doing these mentorship sessions as well. Again, it's all like the same thread of I like to share my experience and my knowledge just to help others, making maybe a bit easier, you know, than I found it when I was doing it. So yeah, thanks for having me.
That's nice.
You're welcome. I can relate to that, actually. So yeah. First question we ask every guest that comes on the show is, how did you get into tech?
Okay. So I think, like many like computer science or like engineering students, like when I was younger, I liked to like tinker with things. So like computers, like those old like videotape players and stuff, and like DVDs, just sort of like make them work. So I had a reputation in my family for being the person who will fix those things. And I mean, like the interest sort of dwindled as I kind of grew. So in GS3, like I guess that's like high school or something, when you do your junior exams, like junior YEC, I unfortunately, and unfortunately for myself, I did really well. So I got all A's. In my mind, I was like, oh, like at this point, I wanted to do art, actually. I wanted to go to arts class. But then unfortunately for me, because I got all A's, like everyone was like, you have to be in science. You know how Nigeria is now, like, like you just know that you are going to be a doctor or something. And so like I even did an aptitude test, and like all of my interests were arts, but like I just somehow ended up in science class, like much to like my parents' wishes and like the school's wishes at the time. And then I finished, and you know, I did my senior secondary school. I did literature, even though I was a science student. But then, of course, like at the end, I was like, okay, I'm going to do government and I'm going to do law. And my parents were like, why would you want to do law? You should do science. And my dad took me to Babcock, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go and find out what I need to do to, you know, to be a law student. So I was going to read my government like textbook. Even though I didn't do government, I was dedicated to this thing. I was like, I am going to be a lawyer. And we got there, but my dad was like complaining, and he was like, I don't know why you want to do this thing. I'm like, what did you do all day here? You're just going to complain. And then I was just like, okay, you know what? I will just do science and I'll do computer science. And like at that moment, I made the decision, and that was it. I did computer science, right? After school, I was running a business, and I was like, okay, I'm not going to, you know, work. I'm going to continue running my business. My parents were like, no way, you have to get a job. So I got my first job. In fact, I remember like going for the interview. I had just finished my driving lesson. I was so unprepared. Like, in fact, if I tell you some of the answers that I gave when they asked me, you'll be like, what is this? Like, they're asking me about technologies. I was telling them about Samsung phone and whatever.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I was so unprepared. But, like, I don't know how. So they gave me a take-home test, and I actually did well on the test. Like, I put a lot of effort into it. I had like supervisors from my IT, and I called one of them up, like, oh, I have this opportunity. Do you think I should take it? And they were like, oh yeah, like you know, you're really smart. So like, you should do it. So I went to one of them, like one of their houses, and he actually, you know, walked me through, because I needed to use some frameworks that I hadn't, you know, used before. So he was like helping me out and everything, and we made progress. And that's how I got the job. So at least even though I failed, I bombed the like, you know, physical, like oral interview. Yeah. I actually did I tried, you know, with the take home test. And so that's how I got the job. My very first job as a software engineer. That's why it's all us. Like I made it to tech. And actually in my mind, I was always like, you know, I'll just do this thing for a while. Then I discovered DevOps, and, you know, I joined Paystack. I knew that there was no going back. So I was like, I'm fully dedicated to this thing.
Do you quietly thank your parents for giving you the push?
I do. I very much do, actually, because
that's interesting.
I don't know if I would have made it as a lawyer, because I don't think I would have made it.
Oh, man.
So what do you do as an observability engineer? And so, of course, you started as a normal software engineer, right? And then you transitioned into DevOps. And then from DevOps, you started leading observability. So can you walk us through what it's like being in that space?
Okay. So I guess like you would have gotten from like my stories, I sort of end up finding myself in all these like random places. And so at my very first year, you know, I worked as a software engineer, and I had the opportunity to either join another software engineering team or, you know, join the DevOps team. And at that time, like, DevOps was really new. Even in our company, we had just, like, set up some, you know, deployment pipelines. We had set up AWS. But, like, it was it maybe, like, two-man team, pretty much. And they were just, you know, trying to figure out things as they went along. And then at that point, I was like, okay, I really don't want to join this other software engineering team because I didn't, you know, like, I value my mental health and I hadn't heard good things about that team. So I was like, you know what, let me just go and do this DevOps, right?
That's interesting because I would have assumed that for DevOps.
She said she values her mental health and then went ahead to do DevOps. That's crazy.
You know, like, I was very newly introduced to DevOps at the time. Okay. And it wasn't like, you know, then...
So someone lied to you.
Yeah. And it wasn't even as popular, like, generally. You know, now, like, they're very fully formed, like, DevOps teams, SRE teams. Yeah. It wasn't exactly that way before. And so I joined the DevOps team. Of course, I was new. I was just, like, learning, just pretty much, like, I would sit down by the engineer's desk and just, like, see what he was doing. And pretty much he would say, just, like, run this bunch of commands on the command line. I will bring up, like, instances. I'm like, what is all this magic? So I did that for a while. And then I saw the Paystack role, applied for that. That was more of a challenge for me because, obviously, Paystack was a bigger company. Even though, like, the company I worked at first, they had, like, different products. But Paystack, very, like, product-driven, and you sort of had to be in line with, you know, the mission of the company, which wasn't difficult anyway because, you know, Paystack is a great place to work. And so, like, with DevOps, of course, we were doing cloud, we were doing, like, deployments and pretty much, like, managing that. And for me, I was just, like, going along with it. It was like, if there's anything that, you know, we need to figure out, I would sort of be the person to say, oh, yeah, like, I'll take a stab at it. I just liked to do, like, I don't know, different things. And then, of course, like, when we started talking about observability, actually, from my previous place, we had a client who had started asking us about incident response. And so when I joined Paystack, I was like, oh, okay, incident response. We didn't have, like, a mature framework at the time. So I started, like, you know, researching. I was like, oh, you know what, we're just going to pay for this thing. It's called PagerDuty. We can all go on call and everything. And started drawing up, like, okay, this is the responsibility matrix. I have no idea why I did all these things then, but, like, I was like, okay, engineers, congratulations. You are now onboarded to New Relic and PagerDuty. You have to go on call. And because I was doing that and sort of, like, you know, pushing that, it now sort of became, oh, if we're looking for anything, you know, monitoring and everything, you would ask Ibukun. And so at some point, we sort of decided to do a migration to a different, like, observability tool, which was Datadog. And all of that, like, research and, you know, what tooling should we use, I was sort of leading that. I had a manager at the time who was very supportive of all my dreams. And so when
that's,
I said...
That's very important, by the way.
Yeah. And so when I say, oh, hey, Lucknan, you know, I want us to try out this thing, he'll be like, yeah, whatever, like, go and do a POC and come back. So that really gave me the, like, chance to really explore. And then I think I did that for a while. I was still part of the DevOps team. So I was picking up, like, different tasks, but a lot of, like, the things, like, observability-wise, I would sort of, like, suggest that, you know, let's do this and put it on the roadmap. And I would sort of be the one to pick it up. But then team was growing. I actually went on maternity leave. So I handed over to someone else to say, oh, I've started this, like, Datadog migration. This is where I am. And this is where you should, you know, sort of continue on. And it was sort of at the feedback stage. And I came back and he was doing really well. His name is Okwe Onikute. He was doing really well. Yeah. Oh. Okwe was my was my guy.
I know that guy. He's quite... I know him.
Yeah. So, he was doing really well. So at that point, they were like, okay, you guys, congratulations. You now have a team.
Wow.
The observability team. And, you know, we were working together. The team grew, you know, to maybe about 4 or 5 engineers before I left. And then I went on, you know, to Wise. So I've been at Wise for a year now. I guess my day-to-day really as an observability engineer is just making sure that the infrastructure that allows people to, like, monitor their systems, know what's happening within their systems, is up and running. At Wise, my role changed a bit. So I don't do, like, technical work as much as I used to at Paystack, which I really missed at first, but I think I've adjusted. So I do pick up, like, technical tasks, like, much to my team is surprised. I'm like, oh yeah, just assign this thing to me and, you know, I'll do it. I'll just and create one new thing for them. I'm like, okay, congrats guys. Like, I've created this new thing. This is what we're using now. But I think right now my focus, you know, my main focus is really on like building my team, making sure that my team is working well, the systems that we have worked to make sure that like people, I guess our customers who are other engineers are, you know, satisfied with the tooling that we have. So we look at it as a product and we try to like support that observability wise.
That's a lot. And I from what I know, you're supporting basically the entire company. So this I don't know, maybe this sub product cannot be using Datadog while the other one is using Sentry or something like that. Yeah. Right. So how does it work in your mind in terms of context switching? Because then you kind of have to have some context of what everyone in the whole company is doing. So how do you manage that?
I guess it's been different, like from company to company. So in my first company, I had an idea because I had worked there for a while. So I worked there for almost 4 years. So obviously, like towards the end of the 4 years, when I started like picking up observability stuff, I had an idea of like, you know, the different teams, their different products. And actually, my interest in observability started then as well, because I started like building dashboards for the teams and stuff. And we already had the tooling in place. I think one of the previous engineers had sort of set it up, but we weren't using it properly. So I was just like, okay, I kind of start from like, this is the tooling that we have, and, you know, understood what it could do and, you know, started talking to the engineers about it. So again, I was there for 4 years. So I had like a fair understanding of, you know, what was going on. I think same thing applies to Paystack as well. I was there for almost 4 years. And I knew
so
I
had a good idea. Like presidential terms and stuff.
Yeah, so I had like a good idea of, you know, what the teams were working on, how to support them. We would join like their review meetings as well. So like towards the end, I had this like rotation with my team where they were supporting like a group of teams, and they would join the meetings, you know, where those teams are reviewing their, you know, dashboards, incidents, and you sort of get an understanding of, okay, you know, this is what endpoints powers transactions. This is the endpoint that powers, you know, something else. So it was sort of like, and then again, like one of the things that we wanted to do was to support like product observability, not just like engineering observability. So in the sense that you understand like your engineering metrics, but of course, like you're powering a product, right? So understanding like how is the product performing from the user's perspective, like we really wanted to understand. So like how is, for example, like Paystack transactions or like Wise transactions working, instead of just like how are our like, you know, Kubernetes pods running, that sort of thing. And so because of that, like we spoke to like the, you know, the leads, the team, to sort of support all of that. Again, like because Wise is a much bigger company, we have maybe about 700 teams. It's much more difficult to do.
700 teams.
Engineers rather. So
no, I think it has to happen, because I'm here thinking, if anything happens to my money, Ibuku, I'm coming to meet you. Like directly.
I know, right? Because I use Wise like regularly.
We all use Wise, man. It's crazy.
Yes, we have about 200 engineers. So it's been more difficult to like speak to each one of them. But I think sort of joining the team, my first focus was just getting the team to like a healthier state, because it was a smaller team. Obviously, imagine like, you know, all of the observability, like the observability that powers all of Wise, like it's massive infrastructure to manage. And I think for the past year, my goal has just been like, how do I get the team productive? How do I make sure that our, you know, infrastructure is in a stable state? And I think now what we've sort of done in terms of starting to reach out to teams is we now have a PM. Actually, we got a PM last quarter, and he's been working with me, working with the team to do like user interviews to sort of understand what each team or like each, I guess, well, each category of, you know, our users use our products for. So I think that's sort of the start of like the conversation to really understand like what each team does and, you know, how we can support them. But I guess like in terms of like the scaling of, you know, observability, like because obviously as Wise, we use select like, you know, languages and frameworks, like a lot of things are written in Java. You can sort of standardize how you collect metrics, you know, how you collect logs, how you collect traces across, you know, especially when you're working with like specific sets of services. So we have another team, which is the application engineering team. And they write libraries and just make sure that, like, you know, if you use those libraries, you have like your default metrics logs, you send your traces. So in that sense, like, we have like a good system for like scaling, you know, as the company is growing.
So how much code do you write like now compared to where you're doing just DevOps?
Yeah, in the past year, honestly, I've written almost, almost non-existent. I think I worked on projects because I think, you know, what I was saying is like one of the ways we think about observability is like we have a product, you know, that we're offering to people. And one of the things I wanted to do was to measure like our availability and all of that. So just like thinking about, you know, what metrics we should be collecting to make sure that, you know, for metrics we're up, for logs we're up, you know, that sort of thing. So I started working on that project, and I needed to put that in code. And then I think I did a few other projects here and there, just like pair programming with my team, because I like to sort of get close to what they're doing, just have a good understanding.
Close to the metal.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that I'm not far from, you know, those conversations that they're having. So yeah, a lot of my focus, you know, in the past year has just been like making sure that the team is working and that like things don't die.
That's the manager. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Exactly. So
I have a personal problem that I think you should be able to solve. Okay. So I work in a company, right?
Yeah.
Hypothetically, I work in a company and I write code.
He works
some code
in the company.
And
remove the hypothetical.
No. Let's be hypothetical here. So I write some software, and I'm not responsible for the observability part. So like metrics collection and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I have some problems. Let's say something goes wrong in production and I want to be able to debug in production. Is that also part of something you solve as an observability team? Allowing people to kind of figure out problems in production?
Yeah, I think that's like the essence of observability, right? Like making sure that you're sort of collecting signals and using those signals correctly. Technically, I do believe that there's a lot of responsibility on the engineers. For an observability team, of course, we're responsible for making sure that the infrastructure that would, you know, process your data is there. We're responsible for making sure that it's available, is scalable, we're responsible for the product, but, you know, determining what metrics to send, what logs to send is really up to the person who understands the code the most. And then, of course, we can, you know, give you guidance on like best practices, you know, how to use the tooling that we provide. But again, all of that, you know, sort of just sums up to if something is wrong in production, before things go wrong in production, you have an idea because we have, you know, stuff available for you to, you know, diagnose and debug and understand your system.
Hmm. Okay, that makes sense.
I'm curious, would you say, because you just mentioned that you don't write as much code as you used to, and you also mentioned that you kind of miss it. Yeah. But would you say, you know, engineering management is about, you know, managing engineers and all of that. Would you say that's a more tedious task than, you know, just talking to the computer?
It depends. It depends. So computers are predictable most of the time.
Exactly.
It's kind of fun to, you know, just like sit down with your code, figure it out. And then you have this like satisfaction of, I figured this thing out. It works in production. And you can sort of like move on with your life, right? People, not so much.
At all.
So basically, you are responsible for these people. You sort of have to understand, you know, not just how they show up at work, but like with my team, you know, I have conversations. I know, you know, what their wives are doing. I know how their kids are doing. It's my personal choice to sort of have those conversations with them, but it sort of helps me understand how they are showing up at work. So like, if someone, for example, if their child is not sleeping well and they are, you know, struggling at work, like it's sort of my job to say, you know, take time off and, you know, refresh and, you know, come back. So I have those conversations with my team, and it means that sometimes like even making tough decisions is difficult because you understand like what this person's family is, you know, you understand their situation. Uh-huh. And sometimes I'm like, maybe I should just not have these conversations with people so that if I have to make a difficult decision, you know,
you can
I'm just
close
like,
your eyes.
Yeah. But like I know myself and I don't think I can run a team like that. You know, I like to have these conversations with people just because generally, like I think obviously, like, a lot of things that happen personally for you affect how you show up at work. So it's not something that you can, you know, put to the side. On the other hand, I do enjoy, you know, having these conversations, making these connections as well. So as difficult as it is, I like it. I like the different aspects of, you know, thinking of what the team should be doing, putting systems in place. I'm a very, like, my manager says, like, I'm a very methodical person. Like, I like things to be done in a very certain way, just because, like, it helps my sanity and my peace of mind. But I find that it has helped me grow teams that are productive and teams that, you know, perform well. And so, yeah, I miss writing code, to be honest. And I had a project. I worked on a course recently, actually. I just wrapped it up last month. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to use, like, very different, you know, technologies that I've used before. And it was frustrating. And I was like, okay, you know what, maybe it's not so bad. I'm never anymore. But no, I've enjoyed very thoroughly, like, all of my time, you know, writing code. I think I just have a different focus now, but I guess it sort of would shift, you know, depending on the company that you're in. Because when I joined Wise, my manager was like, you can decide to be a technical manager, or you can decide to be, like, a people or products, you know, manager. And initially I was like, oh, I'm going to be, you know, technical, and I'm going to, you know, dive into the code. But I realized that it was difficult to do that and really focus on, like, the team's productivity. Because, like, the thing is, once I'm writing code, like, that's where my mind is. Every other person are focusing about you, which doesn't make for, like, a good engineering manager, because you have to manage what everyone is doing. So that was sort of, like, where I now found the balance of, like, okay, you know what? I just need to, like, focus on people now. And, of course, as the team grows, as the team becomes more stable, there's more time. Like, I find that there are pockets of time where, you know, I can focus on something technical, or I can pair with one of the engineers on my team. So I try to make use of, you know, those times where I have a bit of downtime and there's not much, you know, team, you know, stuff going on. So, yeah, it's a mix. I actually can't choose.
Fair enough.
So from a small startup of, let's say, 5 people, and you have, let's say, 2 engineers, and then everyone else is maybe doing business or finance or something. And then the company grows, they expand, you know, plenty users, you know, they raise money, and then they expand to, let's say, 50 people. And then afterwards, you know, they grow, they expand, they start creating new sub-products, and then they grow to, let's say, 200, and then like that, they get to 1,000. How would you describe the changes that they will need to make in terms of, first of all, it starts as maybe CICD, just ordinary CICD, you know, so if something breaks, somebody has to SSH into the server and fix something. And then, of course, they cannot do that when it's 1,000 people, right? So what are the different points in time when a company has to revamp, like, their platform to make it more scalable?
That's an interesting question. All right. I mean, like, 2 people, I would say, to be fair, when I think of 2 people, of course, even if you want to say, like, you want to do deployments, I mean, it's easier for, like, 2 engineers to just, like, you know, I don't know, commit to a GitHub repo, and they're just, like, you know, as you said, like, SSH, and, you know, put things and deploy from there. But I think as much as you can, like, if you have the bandwidth to sort of start small, start open source, start free, is what I would say. So if you can whip up, like, a very, like, low maintenance, you know, pipeline that deploys, that's good, because obviously you're sort of setting yourself up for success as you grow, right? As the team grows, obviously, let's say you have, like, let's even say, like, 15 to 20 engineers. If you can dedicate, like, 1 or 2 of them to look after the platform, you know, that would be great, because obviously the more you grow, the more complexity you have. I think what I would say really is, like, in starting out, like, choose, like, software, tools, infrastructure that you can grow with. Obviously, you know the commonly used things, you know the things that most of these big companies are using, where you can start, you know, with the free versions, or you can even go open source. I my first, like, major introduction to open source was at Wise. And I realized that, you know what, even if you don't have, like, the full suite of, like, tools like Datadog or New Relic, sort of, like, starting at that point, and, like, you know, those tools are robust enough for you to, you know, quickly, maybe not quickly, but, like, to set up and to maintain And even like with some of the, like Grafana Cloud, you have your free version, right? So you can probably start using that at whatever level you're at. And then obviously as you grow, continue to like consider like the cost, continue to consider like your engineering hours. I think where I would say you should sort of be looking out for and deciding when to scale is, if you're using something that's open source, you know, is it now becoming too much of a burden for your team to maintain, where like their productive hours, they're just, you know, sort of using it to maintain something and keeping it, you know, up and running. If you get to that point, you might want to consider paying for a tool, but of course you want to make sure that it's a tool that can scale with your growth as well. So when you, for example, like consider tools like Datadog, New Relic, obviously, as your data grows, your cost is growing exponentially. But when you consider things like open source, your storage is in S3, which doesn't grow as much, you know, with your, the cost doesn't grow as much, you know, as your data is growing. So you're not going to see like 10x, you know, all of a sudden, or like 5x all of a sudden. So I would say really like the balance is sort of thinking about how much is it costing you in terms of like engineering hours versus like dollar cost. Like, you know, keep things as open source as possible until it no longer makes sense.
You mean free?
Yeah, free. Free, actually. Because obviously, like as a startup, you're just trying to like get put money together. It doesn't make sense to go and sink all of that money in your infrastructure costs, like, because there are other parts of the business that you want to support. And what I find really is that obviously as data grows, like those questions will come. Observability is one of the places where people are like, why are people spending this money? I'm like, it's your data.
And it's a lot of money.
I saw the budget money for my previous company and I was like, okay,
yeah,
these guys are spending
money. They are spending your salary on infrastructure.
Exactly. But I mean, like, it has its benefits, right? Because obviously when you think about the money that you're spending, imagine if you had a downtime and you lost like a bunch of customers or you lost money. Like, there's also a trade-off, or there's something that you're sort of getting when you have those the visibility into your system, right? But I would definitely say just like keep an eye on, you know, your engineering costs in terms of like how much your team is spending on like maintenance, how much time they spend on maintenance, and just keeping things up. If you're getting to the point where like the teams are not able to be productive for like a long time because it's all about like, you know, fighting fires and incidents and stuff, it might be time to start considering something that scales, or even maybe just re-architecture to make sure that, you know, it's either you're paying for that scale or your infrastructure actually can scale to match your growth. I think there's no like magic number of like, you know, when you should pay for things or when you should grow. But I always say, like, if you're going to choose your tooling, you need to sort of be sure that this, you know, tool has like a track record of keeping up with the industry. So like if you're using a specific vendor, making sure that, you know, when observability is moving in one direction, they are also moving in that direction, because you know you're going to get the best of, you know, what is available in the industry. So you don't feel like, oh, everyone is doing AI now and there are obvious benefits of AI, but the vendor that I'm locked into, I mean, avoid vendor locking, but like the vendor that I'm locked into or the vendor that I'm using, you know, is not moving in that direction. So I now have to do like a whole migration. You want to avoid that. And I think there's enough information out there now for you to, you know, actually do proper research, do, if possible, like do POCs, reach out to like these companies. They're very like keen to get customers. So you'll be surprised how much, like, every time we use something new, I just go to them. I'm like, oh, we want to try out this thing. And even when we were paid customers in Paystack, like they would still give us certain tools that they were just releasing for free. Because I would go to our manager, our, you know, maybe like, I think our technical manager, or I can't remember which account manager at the time, and be like, oh, we want to try out this new thing that you guys have released, but we're not ready to pay for it. Would you give us like 1 to 2 months free, you know, to sort of test it out? And of course, like, they'll give us because they want our money.
I like the fact that everybody, they hustle, you know, regardless of industry.
Exactly.
I love that.
Exactly. No matter the size, you know, it's the small money they are collecting from here and there, you know, that is contributing to their revenue. So, you know, feel free to like reach out to their account managers, speak to them, you know, or like reach out to the community of the tooling that you're using. Like, Grafana's support is pretty good. If you join their Slack, it's open source, but, you know, you would get answers. I know my team is usually in there, like engaging with them whenever we have issues. So I guess in a nutshell, like, look out for the balance between your engineering and, you know, dollar costs. and ensure that, you know, as you sort of start on your journey, whatever tooling you're deciding, or like infrastructure you're deciding to choose, you sort of have a good understanding of like what the ecosystem of that, you know, infrastructure is like what is their support like, how do they sort of evolve, you know, with the industry, and also how do their costs, you know, scale, or how would the cost scale as you grow, so to sort of make your decision.
Fair enough. That makes sense. So would you say it's necessary for a small startup to already start considering having someone that will help them with that, like an observability engineer on the team? Because we had the cybersecurity episode one time, and the professional that I brought on said, you know, it's always funny when people think of cybersecurity afterwards.
Yeah. You know?
and not when they're starting out the product or the company. So would you would you advise, you know, startups that just get inside, look, what you're building, you're going to need someone to help you manage this thing down the line, right? I'm pretty sure Wise wasn't as big as it is now. It started from maybe 2 or 3 users, right? So would you advise, you know, smaller startups to start thinking of that early on?
Yeah, I definitely think so, because you sort of don't want to be caught unawares, like when your products, you know, grows. So one of my colleagues and my friend, like Femi, is the founder of Chowdeck. And very early on, like when they started, you know, he immediately was like, oh, Ibukun, we want to get this visibility into this. How do we do this? How do we do that? And I like that thinking, because obviously, like, there's no set time that your company will blow, you know, right? So
can be like Ashake.
Exactly, yeah. Like overnight. And then, of course, like, if you experience that sort of growth where, you know, all of a sudden, like, people know your products, people are using your product, you are going to be experiencing like issues that you do not anticipate, issues that you don't understand. So if you already have started like thinking about it and you already have tools in place, like, it doesn't have to be the most robust thing. Like, as I said, like, start free. And free doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you're not getting the best of, you know, what is out there. Like, Wise, we use open source Grafana. And we use like open source, you know, pretty much almost anything, everything. We don't really pay any vendors, you know. So at our scale.
So what do I do with all our money?
I mean, like, open source doesn't necessarily mean like free, or doesn't necessarily mean cheap, because obviously we have a lot of data and we process a lot of data. So we have to pay for that. But yeah, I think definitely from the start, like, if you can, you don't have to have dedicated engineers, is what I would say. You literally can just have, you know, your team instruments what they have, you know, set up something small, start using it. As your team grows, you can say, oh, let me dedicate like one person to it. Let me dedicate a team. Like Paystack, we didn't start out with observability. We were DevOps. It was myself and I think one other person and our manager. So we were 3. And as at the time when I left, we literally had grown from a team of like 3 when I joined to probably a team of over maybe almost 20 people. And it was like from DevOps, one DevOps team, we had security, we had application security, we had observability, we still had DevOps. So we had all of those factions sort of grow from the DevOps team. But as you see, like, we made those decisions, or like those decisions were made based
very
on the
early
at the time. But the foundations were always there. When I joined Paystack, there was a new relic. We didn't have like, you know, pager duty, people weren't on call, but there was a foundation for us to sort of grow from. And obviously, like, as the team grew, we were able to now sort of say, oh, like, this person, you can go and, you know, be in your own observability world and not have to worry about Kubernetes, you know, sort of divide the team into like more concentrated teams, like solving specific problems.
Okay. So talk to people listening to this now that are thinking, oh, you know what? I want to do something like that, right? So I want you to walk us through your journey going from software to DevOps to, you know, observability. Like, just what was it like transitioning? And also, what's the difference? You know, you said SRE. You didn't say SRE, but initially, when I thought of observability, that's what I thought of, right? And then you also talked about DevOps and, you know, observability itself. So what's the difference between these three things? And what was it like transitioning? You also mentioned that you know, you thought DevOps was where it was at. And Emmanuel and I immediately disagreed, right? So how did your mindset change, you know, after a while joining that team?
Yeah. I feel like, okay, so I mean, when I transitioned to DevOps, as I said, like I just finished school, like maybe I had just done my NYSC. So it just a year out of school, I was still fresh. I had lots of ginger, right? So I struggled in the beginning, but it wasn't because of the work. It was just because of the team that I was in and what I was exposed to at the time. So I joined at the point where I think we were doing some migrations. So there was, with migrations, there's a lot of like random, like all this tracking that you have to do. Like, okay, have we moved this service? Have we moved this thing? Yeah. And that was sort of my responsibility. And I hated it so much. But I think over time, I started trying to do things myself from scratch. I think that was sort of where things turned for me. And that was maybe about probably like a year or two into my career. Because like before then, there were a number of engineers on the team, but then they started to leave. And it was like, okay, Ibukun is the, you know, oldest person on the team. So you have to stand up and, you know, do the work, right? Yeah. But even before then, I had been doing it, but I was sort of just like managing what people, you know, had built, because obviously we already had a few things in place. But I think for me, like my career started to turn when I was like, okay, I'm just going to like go and do this thing from scratch. I'm going to learn how to build the CI/CD pipeline from scratch. And I think at some point I met someone who said, oh, if I need you to do this like AWS networking thing, and you know, and so literally from scratch, I had like an AWS account, built the networking for that, built the CI/CD pipelines, and you know, helped the guy, you know, deploy his service. And at that point, I was like, this is the thing I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
It felt so good, didn't it?
It felt so good. I was like, wait, this is so interesting. Interestingly, like shortly after is when I had like the Paystack, you know, interview. And they were like, oh, come and build this VPC. I was like, is it this thing? I can't do it.
Oh, too easy.
And so I think when I started to like really, you know, go to, I need to understand this thing myself from scratch and understand like all the different dimensions of it, is sort of when, you know, my interest peaked. And so for me, like the initial transition to DevOps was like, okay, I'm just going to go and see how this thing works. But I think as I, you know, started to fiddle around, it became more interesting for me. When I got to Paystack, I got the chance to do more of that. And it was like literally anything. Like, honestly, I don't even know why I used to volunteer for these things, but I'll just be like, no, yeah, sure, I'll try it. I can do it. And then when I go, I'll be like, who sent me a message? Right. So for me, it has been a lot of like experimentation, a lot of like reading. If I want to do something, I'll, you know, go. And I remember we had a new engineer join our team. And up until then, I understood Terraform, but I think the way he wanted to do it was a bit different. And I just went and like had like this whole course, and I completed the course, and I was like, okay, now I'm ready to Terraform. And I mean, I don't have shame. Like, if I don't understand something, you must explain it to me. If you like frustrated, that's your business. You must explain it to me. So like whenever I had issues, I would sort of sit with him and be like, okay, how do I do this from there? And like, once you sort of show me the first time, you know, after I've sort of done my own learning, I can go on and, you know, figure things out. So that's sort of my blueprint. I just, you know, volunteer for things that I've never done before. Mm. I figure it out. And I continue with it. And it was the same for observability as well. I remember that there were times when we would have like conversations. I remember I'm like, I don't even know what people are talking about. Anyway, Sha, when they say it's time to do Datadog, you see me there.
I like that.
Okay, well, this thing, you know, let me go and figure it out and come back. And I think for me, what has really supported my journey has just been, I had like different people at different points who, I guess, supported my curiosity, especially at Paystack. I think for me, that gave me the courage to just like try things. And even when it didn't go well, I knew that I had a manager who would, you know, have my back. And, you know, I find that I'm getting the same thing at Wise as well. It took a while for me to, you know, adjust, but I think eventually I sort of knew that as long as I'm transparent with my manager, as long as he knows what I'm trying to, he didn't always agree with my way of doing things, but I was just like, okay, yeah, sure. I've heard you. Thanks for, you know, letting me know your feedback. But I think as I've grown in my career, it's sort of now, especially this year, sort of being confident in some of the decisions that I make. And knowing that, okay, if I've made this thing work before, the chance is that, you know, I can make it work again. And so I just, I just dedicate my time to like doing things that I know will challenge me and make me grow. So I think if you want to find yourself in this space, I would say there's a lot of like, you know, information out there. There are lots of resources. I try to create courses that I think would be easy for like anyone to sort of jump on and understand. Because of course, like a lot of these things are very technical, but then there are ways that you can sort of explain to people where it's easy for them to like pick it up. So look for resources like that, where it's easy for you to understand. And you don't have to like understand everything at once. Like I remember that I saw this article from someone at Stripe. And when I read the article the first time, I didn't understand it. I read the article for years. And every time I realized that, oh, this is what this guy was talking about, I'll go back and read the article. I'm like, I understand line one. Very good for me. And next time I go, because I learn, you know, when I practice, right? So even though I didn't understand what I was reading at the time, I just found ways to sort of, you know, try my hands out at things, and then I would go back. And even till now, you know, with the course I just mentioned, it was me sort of battling with like OpenTelemetry and Grafana and, you know, everything. And I was like, you know what, it's a chance for me to really understand how the open source system works, because obviously up until then I had used like vendors, we had used New Relic, we had used Datadog. But when I realized that, okay, I'm going to be making a course, you know, about this, I might as well use something that I haven't used before and use it as a chance to learn. So I find those opportunities for myself. So yeah, you just have to be curious about learning. You have to, you know, keep like coding, DevOps, SRE, it's all like practical. So you have to really try your hands out at it. Did I get that right? Yeah. Anyways.
We'll allow it. No matter what, we'll allow it.
And then I guess for the difference, like there are different variations of the same thing in a sense, because I guess it sort of started out as DevOps. So DevOps was literally everything, like cloud, deployments, observability, anything you can think of after an engineer commits his code to GitHub was pretty much DevOps. And then it started breaking out into different like teams. So like those like cloud, you know, is a whole thing on its own. CI/CD is a whole thing on its own. Observability is a whole thing on its own. And everything sort of makes up the platform, right? It's basically the platform where your services are deployed. So when you hear of platform engineers, they're usually engineers who work in either of any of these spaces. And then within like platform, you can have like niches. SRE is again sort of like it's also a discipline as well. And SRE was sort of encapsulated things about like availability, observability, incident response, incident management, those sort of things. But I think different companies can sort of define it as they want. It's just if you're applying for roles like that, you just sort of need to be aware of what this company describes as a platform engineer. Do they want an engineer who does everything, or do they want you to come and join a team within their platform engineering team? So at Wise, for example, we have platform engineering tribe. Well, within that tribe, we have a CI team, we have a CD team, we have database, and then like data team, we have observability, we have SRE. So again, like we define those things, you know, differently, but a lot of times it would all be related to like, you know, the platform, which is where which is how you deploy your services, where you deploy your services and how you sort of maintain them from there.
So is SRE the umbrella term for everything, or platform engineering?
I would say platform engineering is the umbrella term for everything. SRE is sort of like a subset of platform, yeah.
I've never seen a job ad for a platform engineer, but I've seen for SRE, and I think at Netflix they pay them close to $400,000 or something.
Yeah.
I'm just going to announce here that I'm changing my career decisions.
No, you know the headache that comes with now. So as long as you can just.
Oh my god! I think the first time I saw a job ad for an SRE engineer at Netflix, I was like, "What is this? What is this salary?" I was blown away, trust me.
Well, the thing is, you ask yourself also, like, what are the responsibilities?
You are trading your blood for money. All right. So, Ibuka, I'm so glad that, you know, you mentioned, you know, how people can get started. We love sharing resources on this show. So we're going to, you know, probably get resources from you and also link your courses on LinkedIn in the show notes. Yeah. And I also agree with the point that you made about, you know, you learning new tools, right, just because you wanted to start teaching something, because I myself, I create content, right? And you know, I know how it is. So yeah, I'm just going to shape this conversation to Come Tech With Us. So can you talk to us about Come Tech With Us? You know, I think it's the newest community in town and it's really vibing. Everybody wants to be a part of it, you know, an exclusive membership card. So talk to us about Come Tech With Us, your community.
Yeah. So I guess I've always sort of known that whenever I want to, or whenever I learn something, I want to share about it, talk about it. So I've had like blogs, I've run like random events and just things like that. And then I think when I joined Wise earlier in the year, I sort of had this philosophy, and I'm a Christian. So there's a verse that sort of says like, your suffering is, you know, for the, like God comforts you so that you can comfort others. And I realized that I was going through like a difficult time, sort of adjusting. But in my mind, I knew that all of these experiences are for the benefit of other people. Like, of course, like I get my benefits from it. Like, you know, I have a good job. I like my house. I earn good money, all of that, you know, that's for me. But then it's like, beyond that, like what else, you know? And I was dealing with imposter syndrome, like very, very high, very, very critical imposter syndrome. Because of course, like I've come from a different country, different culture, different team, different infrastructure. And I'm trying to like settle in here. But even through all of that, at the back of my mind, I was like, someone somewhere is like looking at me like, how did this girl even do this thing? And so I knew that like, even though I felt like there were things I didn't know, I knew that like, if I know like A to F, at least I can teach people A to F. Yeah. I'll be figuring it out as I go, right? And so I think I also sort of had like an interest in content creation. And I was like, okay, you know what? I'll start creating content. For me, like content creation was always like share about what you know, like your experiences. And then I had like a couple of posts about my career and people really responded well to it. So I was like, you know what? If I want to like make this a thing, but obviously I have like it on my personal page. So I'm not going to like ask people from LinkedIn to come and see my family history. And so I was like, okay. And literally like in one weekend, I was like, okay, this is now a thing. And it's a community.
Nice. So,
because I had already had the interest, I'd already been doing the groundwork, like creating content, creating courses. I always knew like what the types of things I wanted to share. I knew that, I think my first focus was I'm a manager and I am very passionate and interested in like management, because I care about the people that I work with. And I know that that's not always the case. Especially in tech, because a lot of technical people get to be managers, but not every, you know, very good technical person needs to be managing people. Not because like they probably can't, but because maybe it's not their strong suit. Like people is a different like kettle of fish from, you know, infrastructure. And I wanted to sort of be that resource where like, regardless of how good or crappy your manager is, you get information on how to grow your career, how to like ask for the right things. And so that was sort of the drive behind like, you know, Come Tech With Us. And I think as a whole, it's pretty much just like a community that I think I wanted to explore like the human side of tech, like the side where there are people who are working, they have like concerns, they don't know how to like move from point A to, you know, F, you know, at least up to where I am, and just sort of provide resources that enables people to do that. And, you know, explore different sides of tech. Let people know that, yeah, like, you know, there are a bunch of engineers, but the truth is like there's so many other careers that you can be exploring in tech as well. And even like when you get into tech, how do you then start to like grow your career? How do you find resources? How do you find like mentors, coaches? How do you manage like performance management? Like these are things that I know that sometimes is difficult because they don't teach you all these things in school. You sort of just
the career
world, and then you're like, oh, now I have
to. I'm even listening. I feel like I need to.
Sorry.
To learn those things.
Look at this one.
Yeah, because I mean, like those things, like very early on in my career, I remember like people would sort of ask, threaten to leave the company so that they could get raises, and I'm like, I mean, I get the, but like I knew that that was not something that I wanted to do, right? So I sort of had to like figure out like, okay, how do I grow but not like threaten somebody else? Like me, if I resign, just know that I've resigned. I'm not trying to get more money. I'm actually going. So you know, like all those types of things, nobody taught me. I just was like figuring it out as I went, and I was like, okay, you know what? Maybe there's room to sort of bring this information to people. Yeah. And yeah. I think that's what ComTech with us is about. Yeah.
That's inspiring. So
is the community open to every single person, like no, regardless of location or so?
Yes.
Most meetings are virtual, yeah, I'm guessing.
Yes. So we, of course, like we share content regularly on Instagram, we share on LinkedIn as well. So we have a ComTech with us page. But we also do like monthly virtual workshops. So the first one was on LinkedIn and using LinkedIn to find opportunities. We had one on Friday, just a few days ago, on like transitioning your career. We have another one coming up next month as well. So all of those things are available, you know, not right now via Instagram, but obviously as the community grows, it might change. But as long as you follow us on Instagram, ComTech with us, you would be able to sort of follow, you know, our journey and sort of where we are, you know, sharing this content. But primarily now, Instagram, LinkedIn. I have TikTok now.
What kind of content will be on TikTok?
Sorry?
What kind of content will be on TikTok?
Oh, no. So it's still like the short form content of like, you know, basically things that we share, like how to grow your career. Pretty much, I'm definitely not dancing on TikTok.
If you don't want to dance, I'll dance for you. I don't mind.
I don't mind. So yeah, but it was just like an attempt to sort of reach as many people as possible, and obviously different people use different platforms. So just like having that information there. The workshops are like an hour long, so I also have them on YouTube as well, just so people can catch up, you know, even after the workshops are done. So those are available on the internet as well.
What form of content do you prefer between writing and making videos?
You know what? I haven't written in a while. So I think making videos, I haven't written in a while. Like at the back of my mind, I always have like an article or two that I should write, but I don't.
I think it's in drafts.
Funny enough, like I don't even write drafts. Like when I'm committed, I'll just like write everything in my mind and then revise. But like
fair.
I think sort of in like pictures and like videos. So when something comes to me, I usually can think of, okay, this is how it would sound or this is how it would look. So I think I enjoy that form of like creation.
That means you must have really enjoyed, you know, doing the LinkedIn thing, the instructor thing on LinkedIn.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Did they reach out to you or is that something you apply for?
Okay, so my husband is an engineer as well. He works at Microsoft and he had an engineer who was working with LinkedIn on a course. And he was like, oh, you know, I heard of this thing. I think, you know, you like all these types of things. So maybe you should apply or something. And I think shortly after, I came across a post on LinkedIn where someone was asking for DevOps. Or they were asking for creators for like GitHub and everything. And then I was just like, me, I'm here. I do DevOps. I can create. As usual, in my usual fashion, just volunteering for things. And then they reached out to me and we sort of, you know, carried on conversation from there. And my content manager has a sneaky way of sort of just being like, Ibuku, I remember you said you were interested in this course. Like, don't you think you should come back and record it? So that's how I recorded like now my third course. Like 3 years in a row, I've had a course.
Oh, wow.
You know, I've been recording.
Back to back.
Yeah, and like this time when I finished in October, I told my producer that I'm not recording any courses this year. If they ask me, I'm available. But like I have a meeting with her next week to discuss my next course, so we'll see how
that's
it goes.
Nice. But I'm guessing the feedback is great. That's why they keep bringing you back, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think so. Like I think the courses have gotten like progressively better, which, you know, I quite like. I'm really excited about the last one I just did as well. Not just because it's something. So I revised a course that's on LinkedIn at the moment. So obviously like it's more updated. Also because it's something that like it took me a lot to create the course. It was a really good learning experience for me. And so as usual, like once I learn something, I try to make it simpler for other people. Exactly. So that makes me really excited to see it, you know, eventually.
Yeah. Nice. Have you considered doing on Old School Africa?
No,
that's
I haven't.
True. Hack Sultan, reach out to us. I'm telling you now. We'll reach out to you on your behalf.
I actually recently I just followed him. I didn't know before that he was the owner of All School Africa. So I reached out to him recently. I'm still waiting for him to reply me, but
we are still waiting for him to reply. we reached out to him last year. God said we never blew.
I was trying to get, you know, because again on Comtech with us, sort of like looking for resources for people. And I think we recently put out something on, you know, getting internships and communities that you can join. And I was looking for, we don't have like a good like internship and graduate like, you know, culture in Nigeria. And so I was looking for people who were already doing something in that space, and someone, you know, sort of just mentioned that. I'm looking for people who are, you know, doing that, because of course a lot of people are learning, they're self-learning, or they just finished from school, and it's sort of difficult to get that leg up. Meanwhile, obviously in developed countries, you have graduate programs, you have internship programs. So you have people who have literally worked for like big tech before they've even finished school, or they know, you know, they can always go back there, and that gives them a better opportunity. So like it's things like that that we try to bring to the community, so that people, even if you didn't know before, now you know, you can take advantage of things like that. So that was kind of why I reached out to him.
Nice. There's one secret that I've been trying to find out for a long time. So every time I talk to a space tech engineer, they always sound like they're enjoying life. Life is good, you know.
Honestly.
And the retention rate for space tech engineers is very high.
Yeah.
For a Nigerian tech company, I don't think people last more than 2 years. Mm. But I know Paystack keeps people longer than that.
Yeah.
People celebrate anniversaries on Twitter.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so happy. Today is my 10th year at Paystack. It's crazy.
Paystack is wow. 10 years old.
No, I'm saying.
I mean, like, I think I don't know. It's just a culture thing. There is a culture of like constant growth. There's a culture of transparency as well. So if you look through like Paystack's values, I was going to say our values, but well, technically I'm a stack, but if you look through Paystack's values, like they are not things that are just on the website. Like they are things that we celebrate. There are things that, so we used to have this like shout out thing, and I'm sure they still do, where you would call out people for demonstrating value. So maybe this person, you know, insisted on high standards, or they communicated clearly. And those were just like things that when you're having a conversation with a stack, like they're like, you know, are you embracing the mission? And like those things are like living, breathing and amongst us. And I think generally people are just, you sort of just come and you adapt to that culture, because there's an overwhelmingly good, you know, culture at Paystack. So it's sort of difficult to go against the grain. And if you do, you're sort of like the odd one out, right? And I think it's also a place where people genuinely care. A lot of people that I worked with personally, I'm still, you know, very much in contact with. I still had lunch with my, you know, manager like a few months ago when he came to London. And even though we don't talk every day, we sort of know that, I know that I have that community of people, you know, that I can always reach out to, that I can always speak to. I think it's just Shola does a really good job and has done a really good job of hiring the right people, people who believe in the mission and people who make sure that that mission is an everyday part of our lives, our stacks. So, yeah.
Stacks. Nice.
Yeah.
That's fine. Ibuku, thank you so much for coming on the show. We're so glad we had you here. We learned a lot. I'm thinking of switching careers right now because of you. But before we let you go, we always ask one final question to our superstars, that's our guests. What would you be doing if you were not in tech? I know you had great dreams to be a lawyer that didn't quite pan out. But I'm guessing if the law thing wasn't there, or you never got into tech, what would your career, what would your life, what do you think your life would be like right now?
What would I be doing? I feel like, I mean, if I go on the original thread that I did after school, maybe I'll be running a business. But I think maybe now I would do whatever job allows me to travel the most, I think is what I would do. So even if it's like travel content, I would do that. Like whatever gets me out of my regular space, you know, more times than not is what I would optimize for.
Do you still travel now?
I mean, when the UK, so we try to explore as much of the UK as possible. I had my parents over for summer, so obviously we were at home just like chilling with them. But It's just unfortunate that now it's winter and everywhere you go is cold. But like, I mean, we're still doing our best with, you know, with whatever weather we get.
Okay. So what are your top three favorite cities so far?
Oof. Okay.
You can mention Lagos. It's fine.
Okay. You know, I've lived in three different countries. So I'll say like the top three. I hadn't traveled too much in Lagos, but I did enjoy like being in Abuja. So I had my camp in, I didn't serve there, but I had my camp in Abuja and that was really good.
Okay.
In Canada, I liked, so there's this really small city called St. John. It's very picturesque. It's very, I don't know, it's just really, it's really good. In the UK, I haven't visited too many cities. But I visited Cornwall. Cornwall was beautiful. So it's kind of, I guess when you think of St. John, you think of like hiking. When you think of Cornwall, you think of beaches. I love the beach. And then I think when you think of Abuja, I don't know if people hike in Abuja, but of course there are like mountains and stuff.
What I heard the last time was that if you hike,
they stop hiking. Yeah, I think they stopped, they gave them warning.
Like, I mean, it's a hiking, it has potential to be like a really good hiking, you know, spot. But like, I guess for the views, you know, are still good regardless. So yeah, I would say those three.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. This was very, very interesting. And I have learned a lot. I'm not like Chuga that jumps around every new role, but I might consider it in the future. So thank you so much for gracing us.
Alrighty, Bufu. Thank you so much. Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. We release new episodes every month. If you haven't yet, please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And if you enjoy the show as much as we do, don't forget to leave us a 5-star review so the podcast reaches more people.
A huge shout out to the amazing team behind this show. This includes John Ayeni, Faith Idowu, Okechukwu Nwachukwu, and of course, your lovely host, Emmanuel Anai. Connect with us on social media at Inside the Techos on Instagram and Twitter, and Inside the Techosystem on LinkedIn. Be one of the first people to get the latest news, updates, and announcements from us by subscribing to our newsletter. We promise we only share the coolest stuff. All right, see you in the next one.